It's Marketplace Tech for Tuesday, the 24th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. Today, Hewlett-Packard Enterprise Co. is scheduled to give the world an update on how it's doing earnings-wise. The larger company split last year, with the enterprise part focusing on cloud computing and services, and the other HP Inc. part focusing on the hardware stuff that made it a tech powerhouse in the first place. That's made it easier for some investors to see a future for both parts. Restructuring may also be what's behind layoffs and shuffles at another OG computer company, IBM. The company announced layoffs last month, but isn't saying much about how many jobs will be impacted. Anurag Rana is an analyst with Bloomberg Intelligence.
When you are trying to shift a company from one way of doing technology to another way of doing technology, what will typically happen is you are going to look for people with a new skill set, and you're going to get rid of some people where they don't have that skill set.
The skill set and product set that IBM is probably looking for right now, those that will help it succeed in a world where software services are being eclipsed by cloud services. Speaking of computers and big shifts in the workplace, our fears about the impact of automation are shifting all the time. The robots will take all the jobs. No, they'll just take the menial labor jobs. Just kidding, they'll take the creative jobs too. Never mind, they'll just make jobs easier. Well, author Tom Davenport tries to make some sense of all of this in his new book, Only Humans Need Apply, which is in part about how the real future will be all about more machine-human collaboration. Tom, thanks for coming by.
Happy to be here.
What are the dangers of building machines that work in concert with humans?
Arguably, this thing that we had a few years ago called the financial crisis had something to do with that because, you know, there were lots of automated mortgage loan decision-making systems that started to go awry and people didn't pay attention. It's a natural human tendency, I think, to once something is automated, you just let it ride. I would say there's no faster way to lose money than to automate a bad business process.
Is there a particular company or industry that you think is doing this kind of augmentation really well right now?
Vanguard, the money management firm. Vanguard has done a great job, I think, of combining human advisors and a robo-advisor, where the human is kind of freed up but can kind of concentrate on talking the client off the cliff when, you know, the stock prices start to drop precipitously.
You write a little bit about telemedicine in the book, right? This idea of human surgeons or human doctors operating equipment that's far away from them. There are some challenges there too, right? I would imagine when it comes to machine dexterity.
In general, I think the machine and the telecom aspects of that work pretty well. In fact, some surgeons say it's like giving you superpowers. You can see better, cut straighter lines, etc. I think there's still a lot of things that doctors do that are not going to be replaced anytime soon. People don't like getting bad news from a machine.
Tom Davenport is the author of Only Humans Need Apply, Winners and Losers in the Age of Smart Machines. He wrote the book with Julia Kirby. Tom, thanks for coming by.
My pleasure.
Hey, thanks for listening to Marketplace Tech. We give you the context you need to understand the business of technology and how it matters to you. Some context on us. We are a nonprofit service and rely on donations from our listeners to keep going. Your gift in any amount will be automatically doubled this month thanks to the generosity of Newman's Own Foundation. And we've just made special Let's Do the Numbers Pilsner glasses available to thank you for your support. Donate today at marketplace.org. The voice of a massive corporate entity can be found in many places. Apple's voice assistant Siri is full of snarky responses to questions that are not direct commands or search queries, like if you say the ignition phrase for Google's early augmented reality headset, OK Glass.
I think you've got the wrong assistant, Ben.
Oh, snap. Google's software, designed to work across devices, Google Assistant, is currently working with a team to build a sense of humor into its responses. Another way the search company establishes its corporate voice is through Google Doodles, the quirky interactive redesigns of its logo on the homepage. Sometimes they're games, sometimes they're animations, like a cartoon version of cryptographer Claude Shannon juggling ones and zeros. Well, I was in North Carolina for the music and innovation event MoogFest last week. I sat in the sun with Ryan Germick, the head of Google Doodle.
Origin story, Google Doodle.
Google Doodle started as an out-of-office message when the founders went off to the Nevada desert to attend the Burning Man Festival in 1998.
One of the O's was kind of flaming or something like this?
They literally put like the Burning Man behind the logo, and today, very much what we still do is kind of put a person behind the logo, in a sense.
How do you decide what to put in the logo? How do the doodles differ depending on where you are in the world?
Yeah, we do basically a doodle every day somewhere in the world. We feel a sense of responsibility to put something in the spotlight that is the Google homepage. We think that there's a lot of wonderful things to celebrate and people to know about, and totally click away to learn more about it.
What doodle has inspired the most engagement?
We have a saying on the team, which is that every doodle doesn't have to be everyone's favorite, but every doodle should be somebody's favorite.
But were there any that were just like far and away more interacted with than others?
Doodles that have games in them, people tend to go nuts for. I think that there's sort of a principle of like, I came to search for something, but I'd rather play Pac-Man. That effect is not trivial. For us, it's not really a numbers thing. Like, we're not really optimizing. We're probably one of the few places at Google that isn't optimized for that kind of engagement.
Do you have to run ideas up the chain?
We have near complete autonomy. I mean, we do like FYI, like what we're going to do. We're older as a team than Google is as an incorporated company. So we've got a long history of making principles and guidelines and having an understanding for like what our editorial voice is, so to speak.
Doodles are fun, but there's also a business question here, right? Do doodles increase the use of Google search?
I would say that if you were in possession of 350 by 200 or so pixels that get seen several billion times a day, there's definitely ways to make more money than to have a bunch of artists, celebrating various things and trying to be creative in that space.
Sure.
Definitely don't think doodles are a revenue driver. I think it's more of like an overall cultural thing for Google where they want to, it's really about solving a creative opportunity with the topic and doing it the best possible way with the medium.
Ryan Germick is the head of Google Doodle. Ryan, thanks for talking with me.
It is absolutely my pleasure.
I'm Ben Johnson, and that's our show today. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.